The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome, Chiefs Kingdom, to another edition of the Out of Structure Podcast on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. I'm Matt Sagner here with Ron Cott Jr. on what's getting to be a bad habit and a disappointing Chiefs season. The Chiefs dropped another one last night, and this one in ugly fashion against the Buffalo Bills at home in the rain. Lightning couldn't even delay this game long enough in order for us to enjoy it. 38-20 was the outcome. Your Kansas City Chiefs are 2-3. And we're going to try hard to find some bright sides here, Ron, but how you feeling after last night's game?
Well, there's not a lot of bright sides. The bright side is getting to talk to you on this lovely Monday morning after a late night, talking to all you guys, all listeners. Shows. Yes. that is the only bright side is kind of getting to have these discussions right now and talk through this, guys, because that's all you can do, right? All you can do is talk through it after a dismal performance, one of the most embarrassing in the Mahomes era, honestly. It's the worst regular season loss in terms of point differential in the Mahomes era. Not a lot of good. Definitely reason to be pessimistic. You know, maybe after the first two losses, it's, you know, hey, you know, they've been close, but, you know, they could have won them without turnovers. This game, even though turnovers were a big part of it, they just straight up lost, and the Bills were the better team. The Bills look like the better team moving forward, and a lot of AFC teams look like the better team moving forward. So yeah, let's get into it.
I was going to ask that question, and I don't know how everybody else feels about this, but would you rather see your team get blown out and just chalk it up to say that was a bad day? You know, let's move on. They got beat. Or would you rather see them lose close games like they did against the Ravens and the Chargers?
Yeah, as a fan, I think you'd rather have the games where it's just kind of decided. You don't want to have your heart broken, right? I mean, you know, I think I could differ between fans, but I think it's just nicer when it's just kind of a nice, quick, easy loss. You can kind of start to accept it as the game goes. Those heartbreakers, man, you just kind of convince yourself and tell yourself, man, they could have won. And so that's why I was like an evaluator, I was like an analyst. You kind of prefer that game because you can still see how they could win and be a great team. But these kind of games, you know, sometimes it's nicer to just have the Band-Aid ripped off on a loss instead of at the last second getting your heart ripped.
It feels like this has been three straight losses. That Philadelphia Eagles game seems like it was a long time ago. But now that they're starting to stack up, this one feels that much worse. If this was the loss earlier in the season and they hadn't lost both of those games to the Chargers and the Ravens, then I think I would feel better about this team to just say, hey, everything went wrong for them on this one night, chalk it up, you know, to a bad day and move on. But when this comes right on the heels of two relatively close losses where, you know, you feel like they should have won, then it really feels like a losing streak now. It feels like this is a pattern, and it makes it feel that much more hopeless.
Exactly. No, it feels like three straight losses. And the problem is the losses keep getting worse. You know, that Ravens game, the Chiefs were in perfect position to win. The Chargers game, they put themselves in a little less position to win, but still were in it at the end. This game, it wasn't even close at the end. I mean, this game was decided, you know, with about 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And we'll get into, maybe this is a good transition to your first point, but that roughing the passer penalty on Frank Clark was kind of the sealer, kind of put the dagger in the hearts of Chiefs fans. With about 10 minutes left, and they went on to score that touchdown to go up 18 points.
You know, I think it's a huge cop out to blame the referees for any loss ever. And I'm not that guy, and I don't want to hear that, you know, argument that the refs cost them the game. But that being said, if you look at the flow of this game, the momentum, the shift, the where the score was, they were down 11. They had just gotten a big stop, three and out. They made the interception, had the ball around midfield. And there was plenty of time left on the clock. Almost the entire fourth quarter was still available to the Chiefs, down 11 with the ball at midfield. You're feeling pretty good about things. Momentum shifting in the right direction. You know, that's a different ball game than where it ended up. And so that call was a terrible call. Everybody agrees it was a terrible call. Call it a makeup call. Call it whatever you want to. It was an awful penalty. Frank Clark did not rough the passer on that play. If you watch closely on the replay, he had him wrapped up, and then he pulls his arms back and almost puts his arms behind his back as they fell to the ground, as if to say, hey, I'm not, you know, I'm falling here, but I can't do anything about it. And so it couldn't have been more obvious to me that it was a clean play, and it totally changed the momentum of this game. So you go from, again, ball at midfield, down 11, to giving up an 85-yard, 8-minute, 12-play drive that ended in a touchdown that put it out of reach. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than that from a shift in momentum. If maybe they wouldn't have won the game, even if that had gone the Chiefs' way, but if they get the ball back there, they score a touchdown. Now they're down 4 early in the fourth quarter. We might be talking about this game a lot differently had that one call not gone in their direction.
Yeah, and I hate to use the makeup call thing, but you're right. I mean, the play before, there was a holding penalty that was pretty iffy on the Bills that actually took away a Josh Allen run that went for a first down. And so if that is really what it is, that's just, I hate that. You know, I don't, you know, you should only call a penalty if it's an actual penalty. If you screw up a penalty before, you shouldn't have to make it even by, you know, making another iffy penalty a penalty. So, and that wasn't the only time too. I mean, the Gordon offensive pass interference, you know, Gordon trying to release off the line of scrimmage and get into his route. And his hands were not on, you know, White, who was the one who forced the OPI. White's hands were inside Gordon, kind of holding onto his shoulder pads a little bit. And Gordon was trying to get out of it and to get into his route. I get what the ref maybe was seeing, because he was, you know, from his angle, maybe it did look like Gordon was just basically blocking for Kelsey on that. But I think that was pretty bad too. I'm not blaming the refs for the loss or anything, but it just kind of shows you that, you know, in these tight games, it happens too. And what also happens in these games is, in these losses, is you kind of realize where this team's at right now. And I'll transition to my next point, and the fact that this team just isn't elite right now. We shouldn't consider this team on the top shelf of the NFL right now. And I have a hard time saying that. You know, I've had a hard time saying that over the first 4 weeks of the season, but they've proven that they're not. I mean, you know, at some point the turnovers are part of you. If they keep happening, that's a narrative that's not going away. I mean, that's part of what you're doing bad. You know, I love your analogy you make, Stags, on Twitter and on the pod before, the whack-a-mole. I mean, as soon as the offense starts, you know, playing well, the defense is bad. As soon as the defense maybe starts getting some stops, the offense can't do anything and gives the ball away themselves. It's just, this team just can't get on the same page altogether. This is not, as a whole, an elite team right now. And it's kind of sad to say.
So are you trying to say that expectations were too high coming into the season? Like, we shouldn't have expected this team to be elite? Maybe they weren't as talented as we thought they were?
No, I am not trying to say we shouldn't have had expectations. I think we should have had the high expectations were, you know, good. I think that's what you want from a Super Bowl contender. This team is an offensive juggernaut. So and this is an offensive league right now. So you expect the offense to carry this team. You expect the defense maybe to just get some stops in certain situations, but not to be perfect. And I think that was there's plenty of reason to have those expectations. Those weren't unjustified, but they've proven right now that, you know, as elite as their offense can be, they can't get out of their own way with fumbles and interceptions and bad, you know, bad turnover worthy plays. And the defense making those big plays. They're not creating turnovers like we've seen from Spags. I made a note on Twitter. This is 3 games straight now that the defense hasn't forced a turnover. In the Spagnuolo era, There's only been one other time that they've only gone two games without forcing a turnover. This defense is kind of predicated on those big timely sacks and those big timely interceptions or fumble recoveries. And they're not having those this year, as well as they did play in spots against the Bills towards the second half, especially. They're just not making those big plays. And that's really been why this team has just regressed to the point where you can't consider them on the top shelf of the league right now. It's crazy. It's crazy to say.
So resetting expectations already in this season. It hurts to say out loud. I mean, it is, you can see it both ways, right? This early part of the schedule for the Chiefs has been a gauntlet of other good teams, but by most measures, they've failed in that test. And so if you're measuring yourself against the other top teams in the AFC, I think it's pretty fair to say they have been bested by most of the best of the AFC so far. And so that puts them a tier below until they prove otherwise. And the next few games, the schedule eases up a little bit, but you know, does that prove anything if they win their next four games in a row? Will you be back on board at that point?
See, that's a great question, because I do think that there's a very great chance the Chiefs are 5-3 in 3 weeks after, you know, they're going to be playing Washington on the road, Tennessee on the road, and, you know, New York Giants on Monday Night Football at Arrowhead. Now, look, you know, none of those teams are going to be a walk in the park either. I think all three of those teams can give you a little challenge too. But if this team is still a good team, which, you know, they are still a good team, they're going to win those games, but we're not going to be proven right about anything. No one should be flipping their mind and saying, okay, this team is elite again because they won those three games. They'll play Dallas at home right after that Giants game, which will be a big test, because if this defense can get a stop at all against Dallas and play a little better against them, that'll, you know, that's one of the best offenses in the NFL. And then at the same time, Dallas's defense is making plays too. So that's going to be that, you know, Dallas is a Super Bowl contender, I would say. And that's going to be that next big test. But, you know, before that, we're not going to be proven right about anything these next 3 weeks. I think this team, even if they win, we still should be, you know, we still should have tempered expectations right now for the team based on this 2-3 start overall.
Well, we've said in the Mahomes era that in every game, the Chiefs are going to have the coaching and the quarterback advantage. When Mahomes is Mahomes, that's true. And he covers up a lot of the other problems with this team on offense and on defense, frankly. When Mahomes comes through and saves the day, then we don't worry so much about whether or not the defense was top tier or not. But that was one of my big takeaways from last night, is that Mahomes did not look right. I don't know what's going on. He alluded to it after the game that he had some issues with decision-making. He looked uncomfortable. He looked indecisive. He didn't seem to trust his receivers. He didn't seem to trust the blocking. But what was most disturbing to me last night was I've never seen so many passes from Mahomes that looked bad, that took nosedives into the turf, that were not on target. It was as if he wasn't able to grip the ball. And I said something about it on Twitter, and then promptly he throws an interception and fumbles a snap. And it looked like just there was something not right about Mahomes last night. I don't want to speculate on an injury that may or may not be there, but something was definitely off with 15 last night, and this team cannot win. They are not elite if 15 is not elite.
Yeah, quick stat for you. He had about a 70 passer rating. I think it was 70.6. That is the second worst passer rating in a game of Mahomes' career. The only stat, or the only time it's been worse, was actually somehow in a win against Jacksonville at home in 2018, that rainy game. Hey, you know, a rainy game. Maybe that's kind of what it is. That's not a great excuse, because we've heard Mahomes yell out. He can sling this blank in anything. And I know snow is maybe a little different than the rain, but yeah, you know, you're totally right. It started early too. If you remember the first drive of the game, Kelsey's wide open on the sideline for a huge pass play. And Mahomes had time and actually had his feet set on that one and just overshot him, which, you know, is just not a great sign, you know, to start the game. You can kind of maybe not put that up to nerves to start a huge game at night. But then after that, all the passes, instead of going over receivers, were going at their feet. And I think that's a great point. I think there was something up. His footwork was terrible. I mean, all game. And then when he did step into the pocket, you know, and had a great throw to Hill over the middle on a third down on the first drive, Hill drops it. So, and you know, I know we can keep talking about Mahomes, but I'll use this as a way to talk about my next talking point as well, is that I don't think I've ever seen this offense as out of sync as it has been when everyone's healthy. We've had bad games in the Mahomes era before on the offensive side of the ball, but it's always been this excuse like, okay, Hill's out, you know, and they have, you know, and Watkins went out early, that Colts game in 2019. You know, Kelsey's never missed games, but, you know, maybe they've been missing offensive linemen or running backs. This team has everybody. This offense has everybody on the field right now, everyone that they need to have on the field right now. And it just looked bad all night. I mean, the offense just really could not get anything going. Even when they did have their touchdown drives, it was very hard. I mean, it was methodical. It was not an easy. They relied on some penalties, actually. Some defensive penalties kind of helped them out in times. That whole offensive performance was really discouraging. And like I said, with everyone healthy, it's crazy. It is crazy to hear that or see that everyone healthy, the offense looking that bad. And I know Buffalo's defense is good, but that's just no excuse. This offense should be able to take advantage of any defense, no matter who it is.
Yeah, I mean, over the last few weeks, we were just talking about how efficient and how historically efficient this offense had been, how they're all of a sudden a force running the football, 200 yards rushing, 100-yard games back-to-back for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They seem to be on a path to being this uber-efficient, you know, machine where if the defense takes away the deep throws, they're connecting on the short plays. Or the defense is focusing on the pass, they're able to run the ball. And then whenever the defense tries to step up and stop the run, then you get your shot downfield. I didn't see any of that last night. I'm wondering where the efficiency was. Where was the run game? Where was the efficiency? Where was the, you know, taking advantage of what the defense gave them? Because Buffalo dared them to run the ball. They had a very specific strategy, it looked like, in this game, which was to physically manhandle and beat up Kelce and Hill to the point that they were mostly ineffective. Let anybody else who wants to catch the ball catch it and then just swarm tackle them, but also just to not respect the run game that much. And the Chiefs basically responded by trying to force the ball to Kelce and Hill occasionally, settling for a bunch of checkdowns and short passes to players that had very little chance of running after the catch, and completely abandoning the run game. So I don't know what the offensive strategy there was, or where the efficiency that we saw the last few weeks went.
Yeah, the run game, they abandoned pretty quickly, and that's very discouraging to see. You know, maybe that's a game plan thing. Maybe that's Andy kind of panicking kind of early and thinking needs to, you know, Mahomes, I think, had the most attempts in his career. I could be wrong. Maybe he was second. I saw someone. He was creeping up to that point at later in the game. But it's just the run blocking has been so dominant the last 2 weeks. And the Bills have a good defensive line, but so do the Eagles, and so do, you know, maybe the Bills have better linebackers than the Eagles, and maybe that's where the difference is. But to have a defense invite you to run, your run blocking being good, and that's also a good way for the linemen to get a break. And when they've had some pass protection issues in this game, you know, run blocking is a way to kind of, you know, turn off their brain, you know, give them a little bit of a rest almost, you know, in theory, and just have them block somebody without really thinking about, you know, the pass protection or that kind of thing. Cause that can't help a lineman to kind of just turn off his brain for a second and just try to dominate a dude. They just didn't do that. They relied on their offensive tackles to protect a lot tonight or last night. And, you know, they didn't have the greatest game. I don't think Brown or Niang had a great game. Niang just seems to keep having this issue with his pass set. He does not get deep enough. And I know Mahomes has had issues with dropping too far in the pocket, but I don't think that was the issue last night. I think a couple times when he got pressured from the edge, he was only 8 yards and, you know, in his drop, which is not far at all. You know, 10's where it kind of gets far. But yeah, this offensive line didn't have its greatest game, but I also think the offense didn't give them opportunities to run the ball a lot, and they weren't effective in their runs, no doubt. But I just think you got to keep hammering that maybe, especially with Matt Milano being out and the defensive secondary, you know, the Bills secondary being as good as it is. Man, I was discouraged about how little they run. The Chiefs running backs ended up with 12 rushing attempts for 40 yards, and the longest rush was 9. So that's just unacceptable against and you're going to see this defense keep going. You know, you're going to see this every week. This is what the NFL is going to do against the Chiefs now, is play these soft coverages, these deep coverages, and allow you to run. And for whatever reason, this game, the Chiefs just didn't want to take advantage of it like they had against the Chargers and the Bills.
Whew. Well, while we're on the fun, positive takeaways from this game, we've got to get to everybody's favorite topic and talk about number 49 on the defense. Dan Sorensen didn't have his best game yesterday, Ron. I'm gonna leave it up to our lead analyst here to give us his detailed breakdown to let us know if I'm off on that. But it didn't appear to me that Dan Sorensen had a good game yesterday.
Yeah, we love to use the line that, you know, hey, we're not on the sideline. We don't know what the responsibilities are, the coverage issues, you know, or the coverage responsibilities are, you know, everyone's role. It was pretty obvious that Sorensen was him that was messing up on those plays. You know, it's not like you can say, oh, you know, someone else should have been there to help or yada yada. It was not the case. Now, first of all, we know Sorensen's going to miss some tackles. He had two really bad ones last night. Both, you know, were at the line of scrimmage, ended up being either a first down or like a 9-yard run to set up a 3rd and 1 instead of making it a 3rd and 10 if he would have made the tackle. And secondly, which is the more obvious points, was his coverage lapses. That first big pass to Diggs down the middle of the field. He's in a deep half, and he's the deep defender. And the Bills did run a really good offensive route combination to take advantage of the deep halves on the backside of the play. They had a dig that occupied Thornhill's deep half. He had to come up, so that left his deep half behind Thornhill wide open, so Diggs could have just kept running away from Sorensen. He had plenty of room. But the reason he was so open is because he faked out and then came back in. Sorensen bit really hard on the out fake. And that's something where if you're that deep safety and you're going to have help. It was actually quarters. So the cornerback on that side was getting deep to kind of take away the Diggs route as well. You need to be more conservative in reacting to route cuts. You need to stay on top of it instead of he was flying in like he's about to do a pass breakup on the out route, which obviously Diggs just, you know, easily went back in. He was wide open. And so Sorensen just needs to play more conservative in that case. But then on the pass play to Knox for a touchdown towards the end of the half, I have a bunch of problems with that because Sorensen appeared to be in man coverage. You're covering Knox, you know, that's your only guy. And when you're in man coverage, as long as I've known football, you are taught to only think about your man, really. I mean, you really shouldn't be looking back at the quarterback at all. I mean, honestly, especially if you're, you know, deep down the field, because looking away for 1 second could allow that receiver to get away and get open. And that's exactly what happened. He turns around, acts like maybe, you know, hey, maybe Allen already threw the ball. You know, it looked like he was kind of lost. All of a sudden, Knox gets behind him, especially with a quarterback like Allen. And you'd think a guy that practices against Mahomes would know that the play is never over. He kind of looked like the play was maybe over for him. Let's Knox get behind him. That's a huge touchdown, huge momentum shift at the end of the half. Yeah, Sorensen, I think if that's not the nail in the coffin for him as a starter and to give Thornhill more time, I don't know what will be, because even if Thornhill makes similar mistakes, at least you're getting a guy that's younger, a guy that could develop those mistakes. Sorensen's just this older guy that is not as good as he used to be. And, you know, trotting him out there every snap is not doing you any good anymore. It's just really not. I just can't. 100% of the snaps last night, I can't fathom that, Stags. I really can't.
Yeah, I as much as I hate to just call out individual players, I don't like doing that either because, again, like you said, we don't necessarily know all the assignments. We don't know what the defense, the scheme was, where Sorensen was exactly supposed to be. But you can go back and rewatch. It was, as we started to do a little bit this morning, it's pretty clear that, you know, Sorensen's missed tackles. He's guessing wrong in the pass game. He's guessing wrong at the line of scrimmage when trying to do his run fits. You know, there's mistake after mistake after mistake, and it's pretty glaring at this point. It's pretty hard to argue with. There's an athleticism issue sometimes. You know, So is the bigger problem Sorensen, or is the bigger problem that he's in a position to make those plays in the first place? Like, is he the fact that he's on the field in that spot in the first place at this point? Are you ready to start blaming the coaches?
I think the coaches have to take some blame, right? Because I do want to shout out Spags. I think his aggressiveness in the second half got some of those stops. The defense got three stops in a row and would have had a fourth without the roughing the passer penalty. They got the stops that they needed and put the offense back in position to get back in this game. But, and so Spags deserves credit for that, but allowing your defense to keep getting beat because you have a player that you insist on playing every snap when he's been the one getting picked on and he constantly gets picked on. This is not a new thing. Teams pick on Sorensen in coverage whenever they can. And it really came back to bite him, you know, last night. And so I think that's where Spags deserves a little, you know, a little hate. I mean, honestly, I think 5 games into the season, I think at this point you had to have known that this is an issue, and he just keeps continuing to trot him out there. And if he continues to, that's on Spags. And I know it says something about Thornhill maybe too, that he's not proven it, I guess, to the coaching staff, but at some point you got to make Thornhill prove it in a game setting by playing him 100% of the snaps like you're playing Sorensen. Let him make those mistakes. Then we can get off your back and say, okay, maybe they just don't have any good safeties right now besides Tyrann Mathieu.
Let them fail faster and in a more athletic way if they're going to fail anyway, right? And, obviously in the past, whenever we've talked about Sorensen, it's always this mixed bag of he'll get picked on in the pass game, but he'll make a big stop in the run game, or he'll give up a big play, and then all of a sudden he makes a game-saving interception. And that's been his legacy in Kansas City. So it's not been all bad historically for Sorensen. I don't know what specifically the issue is right now with him. Something's not right about the secondary and how they're meshing. And maybe he's expecting, more help from the corners or something unusual or, something that we're not seeing he's anticipating. But right now I threw out my easy fix on Twitter last night. Let's just blitz Sorensen on every single play. Never has to be in coverage. Never has to make a decision. Never has to chase anybody. Just send him. They're going to blitz anyway. Spagnuolo's going to be aggressive in blitzing defensive backs. It worked last night. The most effective plays from Sorensen were a pair of blitzes, I think, where he really affected the quarterback. So let's just make him the all-time blitzer and then figure it out at the end of the season.
Yeah, no, all of his good plays this year, I feel like I've been on blitzes. The Lamar Jackson sack, if you remember, that was a blitz too. But there just haven't been a lot of good plays. Hey, he tripped up Mayfield week one. So there you go. That's just all-time blitzer. I love that.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm half kidding there. That's not really a thing that you can do, but
I don't know. There is a good idea.
There's something to be said for putting players in the position to do only what they do best and hide them where their deficiencies are. I'm not sure why they haven't been able to do that with Sorensen, but they haven't, and it's costing them games. So, we could go on all day about what's wrong with this team or what happened last night specifically. Ron and I thought we'd have a little bit of fun today. If you remember in the preseason, before all of this started, back in simpler times when we had high expectations for this team, the most talented roster coming into the season that we've ever seen, the depth on this roster, the young players stepping up, we had all this fun stuff to talk about. And Ron and I went out and did a draft, and we drafted our best or our favorite barbecue items from each Kansas City barbecue location. And we had some fun with that. And so we thought we'd do a much less fun version of that now. We'll call it the Doomsday Draft. We're going to go 7 rounds and try to figure out who can put together the best list of problems or the best worst list of Chiefs items so far this year. We did a very scientific method and drew for the first pick, which is going to be me. And we're going to talk about what has gone wrong this year. Each of us, again, we're going to go back to, alternating picks and see who can put together the best roster of problems. You ready for that, Ron?
Yeah, no, let's draft. Guys, listeners, we're probably going to have this, in some sort of poll on Twitter. So make sure after you listen, we'll make sure we have a poll for you to vote on which of us has the best list of worst things about the Chiefs this year.
All right. So with the first pick, I'm going with Mahomes turnovers because Mahomes is the one factor on this team you can always count on. He's the one thing that I mentioned before that just erases other bad plays. What do you do when it's Mahomes that's making the bad play? When it's Mahomes that's the problem, I don't know that there's a solution. So I can't imagine anything worse on this team than Mahomes making turnovers. So that's my number one pick.
That's a good number one pick, because if your best player is putting the ball in harm's way and giving the possession to the other team when the defense is already not very good, I mean, that's crucial. And that's been the reason why this team's lost at least 2 of their games. The Buffalo game does not count, 'cause I don't think the turnovers were, as prevalent, even though they were bad. So yeah, I'd say that's a great number one pick, but I'm gonna go on the other side of the ball.
Wait, hold on. Did you just say the Buffalo game doesn't count for Mahomes and turnovers?
Well, I just meant it wasn't as impactful as the other game.
No, that's one of the things I looked at from last night's game. He had 2 interceptions and a fumble. I mean, this was a Mahomes turnover game. Yeah, there was other stuff that went wrong, but if those turnovers by Mahomes turn into you know, turn into positive plays, there's a very, very different outcome on this.
Yeah, it's just the turnover necessarily, you know, Tyreek drops one and it goes into the safety's hands for a pick six. You know, we didn't talk about it, but that second interception in the red zone, you know, Lucas Niang probably should have done a better job of blocking Russo and getting his hands down so he can't tip the ball up on that throw, because it was a quick pass. And we saw Niang cut him earlier and actually led to a good play. You need to do that because it was a quick pass to that side. And Niang just kind of allows him to jump up, get his hands up, and that's what that pick happened. So
yeah, no. I'll buy that. I think, you know, we talked about that. There's certainly some blame to be placed elsewhere for a lot of the turnovers that Mahomes has had. So I'm not saying Mahomes is the number one problem on this team. I'm saying the turnovers, you know, from Mahomes is arguably the number one problem, because they're now leading the league in turnovers. Lost with 11, tied with Jacksonville, I think. So that's a dubious honor right there.
Jesus.
And Mahomes has, you know, as many interceptions this year as he had all of last year already. I mean, this is turning into a pattern and a problem. And it is the one problem they can't overcome. If Mahomes isn't the guy overcoming the other issues, that they've got nothing.
Well, yeah, and that was why I agreed with your pick, is because, yeah, if your best player is the one making the game-changing crucial mistakes, and even like we said, even if it's not necessarily on him, if the ball is coming out of his hands and turning into a turnover, you know, it goes into his box score, and so just the general turnovers of his has been a huge problem. But I'm going to go on the other side of the ball for pick number two in this draft, and it's got to be the pass rush. I think the pass rush unit in general has just been bad. And I've been waffling back and forth, like, okay, is it more the coverage mistakes? Is it more? No, I think when you talk about the expectations of this defense, the coverage has always been, you know, they put average players in the secondary. Sometimes they blow coverage. That happens. I was expecting this defensive line to dominate games. I was expecting this defensive line to take over games with Jaron Reed as a force inside and Chris Jones. I know he didn't play last night, but Chris Jones being defensive player of the year worthy, and then the depth guys, and Dana has been good. Mike Dana has been a good player. Still, I think his all of his good plays just come on him hustling and not necessarily him making these spectacular individual plays. This defensive line needs to be better, and the run defense hasn't been awful overall, so I'm going to pin it on the pass rush. They need to have more pass rush production. Where's Tershawn Wharton? Dude looked like one of the best pass rushers from the inside of any young player in the NFL last year. And this year, I don't remember one time, you know, maybe I think Chargers game, he maybe had one, but I don't remember one time he's made an impactful pass rush snap. So it's been very disappointing. And that's why I think they're the number one reason on my board.
That's a good point. You know, when you first said that, I kind of hesitated a little bit. I'm like, oh, that definitely wasn't the next player or the next issue on my board. This is probably the sixth issue that I have listed in my extensive research that I did prior to this draft. But you're right, though. This we expected a dominant defensive line. We expected Jones, Clark, and Reed to play off each other, to feed off each other. Wharton, you know, to provide a spark inside. And almost none of that's happened. Now, yeah, there's been injuries. The only guy that's been fully healthy that entire time of that first three is Jaron Reed, and he hasn't been as effective. I will argue that Jaron Reed made a couple of decent plays last night. He was inches away from a couple of game changers last night, but not good enough. I just saw a stat that said that Frank Clark had 5 pressures last night, and nobody else on the defense had more than one. And so you get Frank Clark back on the field, which is great. He gets a little bit of pressure, but at the same time, Jones is on the sideline and nobody else does anything to get after the quarterback. Josh Allen had all the time that he needed, and the pass rush was definitely an issue last night. And frankly, it has been an issue all season. So I think you're right when you come to what the Spagnuolo defense is predicated upon. It's pressure, it's unpredictable pressure, and it's making, you know, turnovers and game-changing plays. And this defense has had none of that. And you can trace a lot of that failure back to the pass rush.
Yeah, and it's hurt the coverage because I think there is an argument to say, hey, is the coverage the worst thing that's not helping the pass rush, or is it the other way around? And for a while, I was actually maybe on the side that the coverage has been so bad that it's not even allowing the pass rush to develop. But I think I'm flipping that, because it does seem like quarterbacks have had all day against this team all year. You know, only in spurts when they blitz are they getting pressure, and that's just not a good sign. Like we said, the defensive line had high expectations. They're one of the least effective pass rush units in the entire NFL.
All right. Well, it's time for the third pick in the draft. We'll take a break after the first two rounds and let our sponsors weigh in. But for now, I'm up with the third pick. I'm going to go with the aforementioned Dan Sorensen as the third biggest issue for this team so far this year. You know, it again, you hate to call out one player, but it's been pretty glaring on a week-in, week-out basis that he's not in the right position to do what he does best, or he's just not playing up to his expectation. I would say it's probably both, and that's a problem that the team needs to address in one way or another.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. Sorensen was my number three on the board too, so there you go. You know, we're on the same page there. We already talked about Dirty Dan enough, so we can – I'll just go ahead to my next pick here. And I know it's similar to yours, first pick, but I think it is different. I think the team's general ball security has been a huge problem this year, because it's one of those things where you say, hey, it's correctable. You know, fumbles happen. You know, it's going to happen. Maybe there's a bad game 1 week. It's going to correct itself. You know, you're not going to – for whatever reason, this team does not like holding on to the ball. Byron Pringle has fumbled two kickoffs in a row, you know, this week and last week. Tyreek Hill has fumbled a crucial fumble. Clyde has two fumbles. You know, obviously the drops count, in my opinion, as ball security. Tyreek had a couple bad drops against Buffalo. We've seen bad drops from the secondary receivers this year. Pringle had a pretty bad drop game against the Chargers. You know, it's just all ball security has just been awful. And they're giving the ball away in more ways than just one. More ways than just, hey, Mahomes has a bad throw. You know, maybe a seldom fumble. They're giving the ball away in every aspect of the game you could imagine. And it's at some point you think it's going to be correctable, but this is a part of this team now. It's part of the narrative right now that they have terrible ball security. And I think they've earned it because it's not improving. It's just not improving at all. And I don't want to hear about a rain excuse, because that's an awful excuse for this has gone on way longer than just last night. And so I think ball security has been a huge issue, and it's going to continue to be an issue. They need to correct it, and I need to see it happen.
There's a motivational quote that says you are what you repeatedly do. And I think, you know, the Chiefs are who they are at this point. They're the team that turns the ball over more than anybody else in the league. And you're right. It's been in all phases. That fumble last night by Pringle on the kick return was just brutal. To see the ball just flying up in the air like that, you know, to go along with a fumbled snap and an interception that was a drop and an interception that was a bad block. So I mean, you kind of hit the whole bingo card of ways to turn the ball over, even just in one game alone, if not the rest of the season. So, well, as much fun as this has been bagging on all the things wrong with this team, we're all not even halfway through our draft, but we're probably halfway through our pod. So let's go ahead and do a break. We'll hear from our sponsors. Thanks for hanging in with us on this cathartic losing streak edition of the Out of Structure podcast. We'll be right back with more of the Doomsday Draft. And finally, we're going to end with the bright side. I'm going to end this thing on a positive note. We're going to come up with some stuff to look on the bright side right after this. Stick with us.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And we're back. Thanks for hanging with us on the Out of Structure podcast here on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. We're going through what we call our Doomsday Draft. Ron Kopp Jr., Matt Stagner here, drafting the worst of the Chiefs this year in the Doomsday Draft. We're into the third round now. We've gone through. I've got Mahomes turnovers and Dan Sorensen. Ron has the pass rush and the general ball security of the team. We're on to the next issue. Would be the fifth pick in the draft. I'm going to go with the inability to stop a running quarterback. This has been one of those things that, again, when it happens once, maybe it's a fluke and a great player. So when you see Lamar Jackson run against your team and rack up 100 yards, maybe you chalk it up and say, hey, that's Lamar being Lamar. He's an elite player for that reason. But then you see it again with Jalen Hurts. You see it again with Josh Allen. Teams now know that the Chiefs cannot account for a quarterback that can run the ball, and they're starting to design plays to take advantage of that. I mentioned this in previous pods when we talked about the run defense. I argued that the run defense overall hasn't been bad because they've stopped running backs, but they've yet to stop a quarterback that can run the football. And I'm not quite sure what the solution is, other than what seems to be the most far-fetched possible answer, apparently, which would be to get Dorian O'Daniel on the field and let him be a spy on the quarterback. He's done it in the past. He's been effective. He seems to lay big hits when he's in the game in the three snaps a year that he gets on defense. I don't know that that's the answer or if there is an easy answer, but they've got to figure out how to slow down and punish opposing quarterbacks when they feel like they can just gash the Chiefs, not just on a sneak or on some rollout, but right up the middle. It's really, really brutal to sit and watch a quarterback take off on a design run play, knowing that the Chiefs are not going to stop them, and they're going to get 10 or more yards nearly every time they touch the ball.
Yeah, and the Bills were not using Josh Allen in a design run capacity a lot of this season. And maybe they didn't have to because, hey, they were playing very bad team, not very competitive games where you don't – no reason to put your quarterback out to get hit like that. But they put in some run plays over the week, I guess. They put in some Josh Allen run plays. They used them on that first drive to score the touchdown. Josh Allen had a read play that he ran in for a touchdown. Yeah, this defense just struggles to tackle. In general, I think that's one reason, and that translates to trying to tackle quarterbacks where Jackson and Hurts are pretty quick, pretty fast. Allen is just a beast, and you're going to have to really have some strong, sound tackling to get him to the ground, and we just didn't see it. So that was not a good sign, no doubt. But I'll move on to pick number six in the draft. You know, I'm choosing between a couple, but I'm going to have to go with the pass coverage, the secondary. I'm gonna just say I'll specify it a little more. I'll say the cornerbacks. We saw some bright spots from Fenton last night. We really did. Fenton played well. We'll get to that. But this cornerback group in general, and I think it's a big picture thing because Veach's only moves at the position this offseason were bringing in Mike Hughes and DeAndre Baker, which Baker was on the team last year, so you may not even be able to count that as an offseason move. That's just we knew. I think everyone kind of knew that just maybe probably wasn't good enough, but we maybe just trusted Veach. Hey, you know, we've won with lack of an investment in the cornerback position these last few years. I've always had a problem with it, and it's really starting to catch up in my opinion. Now, hey, Charvarius Ward's been out. I don't think he's changing much. I don't think Charvarius Ward is a game-changing cornerback. I think he's just solid, and hey, he probably is doing better than what Hughes and Baker have showed us. Baker only played one snap last night, by the way, so that tells you what they think about him. I just, from a big picture perspective, I think this cornerback group is not invested in enough. And if your big move is going to be trading for Mike Hughes, who obviously failed in Minnesota, and you're kind of maybe seeing why, because he makes plays sometimes, but for the most part, he can't cover anybody. And he's had a really hard time these last 3 weeks covering. Hey, but they've been some good receivers, but it's still not a great excuse. And so I'm going to say the cornerback room has been a big reason. And the pass rush may, you know, like I said before, the pass rush has not been great and is probably not helping the cornerback group. But I also think that there's some blame to go to the cornerback group as well. These quarterbacks are getting rid of the ball quickly because there is no one, you know, resisting a pass in the secondary. The passes are getting there and the receivers are getting open.
Yeah, I had some hopes for this room earlier in the offseason because I do think that DeAndre Baker can play. And I think Mike Hughes, you know, has some ability. But you're right, it hasn't come together. I actually do think that missing Charvarius Ward might be a more substantial item than we've thought. And it's not necessarily that Ward is some lockdown, you know, number one corner, because he's not. But with him on the outside, that's one position they don't really have to worry about. And he sort of does, he does what he does there. He's a physical player. He can battle with bigger receivers. He can battle with tight ends sometimes. And he is who he is. And they, and they've got that reliable piece, which allows other players who are smaller, who, you know, to play inside more and to be in more of a rotation instead of relying on Mike Hughes as a full-time outside corner, for example. Now, last night they had Fenton back, and I think that helped. Fenton played a pretty good game. So I think they've got some depth there. I'm a little bit disappointed in Snead so far this year. And it sounds strange to say out loud because he hasn't been bad, but he hasn't made a lot of game-changing plays yet at all. And I think Snead has been he's an effective player. You know, he got beat last night on one of the touchdowns. He also had a tackle for a loss. So, I mean, he's doing some good things here and there, but, you know, I haven't seen the interception from Snead yet, right? Haven't seen, you know, the sacks that we know that he can do on a blitz in the same way or the same rate that we saw last year. What we thought coming into the season is we had one elite, you know, level corner, one solid guy in Ward, and then a bunch of lottery tickets with Baker and Hughes, and that puts together a pretty decent room. If all of a sudden Snead is more of an average corner, Ward has been missing, then you're relying on those lottery tickets, and all of a sudden the whole room looks bad. So it might be a little bit of a chain reaction there, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah, no, I didn't mention Snead, but that's another reason why I'm picking this position, because he's not been a game changer. If anything, hey, he's had some good coverage on plays, but he's gotten beat, man. He has. You know, Keenan Allen, you know, did him pretty good. I will say he had good coverage on some of those Keenan Allen passes. Keenan Allen's just that good and made the catches. But, you know, Sanders got behind him, you know, last night against the Bills. And Snead, you know, had some pretty good front coverage. He was kind of fronting the receiver. And if the ball was underthrown at all, it's a pick. But that's a really risky strategy against a guy like Josh Allen, a guy like Mahomes, you know, those kind of athletes that can throw the ball wherever they want to. And Allen had a perfect throw to the back, you know, the outside shoulder of Sanders right over Snead. And it was a touchdown. So Snead hasn't been impressive enough for me to lift the rest of the room. And that's why I still think this cornerback room has just not been invested enough. And I think that needs to be a change. I think, you know, hey, instead of using a pick on either Nick Bolton or Creed Humphrey this year, which, you know, hey, that's a whole nother story, but why not think about corner a little more in one of those spots? It would have been nice to get a top 60 pick at corner. I'll let you go ahead for your next pick.
All right. With the seventh pick in the Doomsday Draft, I'm going to go with injuries. And this may feel like a cop-out to some people, because you actually just talked about the fact that the offense has been pretty healthy. But I think the injuries are starting to catch up to them, and they've been key in certain ways. So Frank Clark obviously has been hampered when he's been in the game and missed a lot of time already this season. He's coming back now, and Chris Jones is out. Charvarius Ward's been out. Willie Gay's been out. And now, all of a sudden, after last night's game, now you've got Joe Tooney with a broken hand, who, by the way, broke that hand early in the game, put a cast on it, and didn't miss the rest of the game, stayed in the whole game. I don't know how you do that, but I don't know that if he's going to miss some time. Based on what we saw from Clyde Edwards-Helaire's injury, I've got to anticipate he's going to miss some substantial time. I hope it's not season-ending, but that was my first thought, is that it sort of looked like something that could be. You know, Travis Kelce was banged up. Tyreek Hill was banged up. You don't know how long they can go without or how they can make up for the injuries that are starting to pile up. And so I think the injuries have been an issue, and they're going to continue to be an issue, and probably right now might be one of the worst. They might be peaking in how bad this team is banged up, and they're missing some of these guys. So, you know, we just talked about how the cornerback room is missing Ward. I think the pass rush is desperately missing the fact that having Chris Jones and Frank Clark healthy at the same time. I think those are massive factors on defense. I think Willie Gay is going to be a difference maker. The fact that he missed the first, you know, four games of the season does mean something. It does make a difference. And now going forward, you're missing some key pieces on offense. Hopefully Tyreek Hill doesn't miss any time, but whenever you see knee injury on the injury report, it makes you worry. So injuries are starting to pile up. Injuries always happen, but I think they've been a factor in the team's struggles so far.
Yep, I totally agree. No, the injuries are kind of they're kind of spotty. They're not coming like one at a or you know all of them at the same time. They're kind of coming one at a time. Where you know Clark was missing the first few weeks, and now Jones is missing while Clark comes back, and you know there's a lot of that kind of situation. But I'll go ahead to the next pick, my fourth overall pick, the eighth pick in the draft. I'm gonna go with the pass protection as a whole, and not I'm gonna make sure I make this correct is that. I'm not just talking about the offensive line. I'm talking about the unit in general, and that includes Mahomes. Mahomes has not helped out his pass protection a lot this year, and you kind of saw it in that Buffalo game. He's just very uneasy in the pocket a lot of the times. I feel like it comes in stretches. It's like these bursts where all of a sudden you see, like in a half, Mahomes is just really good in the pocket. He stands in there and plays really well. I think the Chargers' second half is a good example of that after a pretty bad first half in terms of hanging in the pocket. But the Bills game was kind of the whole game. He just was very uneasy. We've already talked about it. And it's a recurring problem. It's something that he just doesn't seem to be able to get corrected. And it might just be kind of still getting accustomed to his new offensive line. But it also doesn't help that, you know, Niang hasn't been great dealing with speed rushes. We've kind of talked about the pass depth, or I mean the depth he gets in his pass set. We saw Josh Sweat last week. You know, he got the sack on it. There was also another sack this week. I can't remember who the player was, but Niang let him in there around the edge pretty good. And Brown hasn't been perfect in pass protection either. You know, against Philly, he actually let the defensive end get an inside move on him, and that caused the interception against the Eagles. But so I think the pass protection in general just hasn't been that great. And I'm talking about Mahomes including that too. Mahomes deserves some fault for, you know, great quarterbacks should maybe kind of take advantage or, you know, boost their offensive line's pass protection by, you know, maneuvering the pocket really well and kind of avoiding, you know, little tiny rushes while still being ready to throw at any time. Mahomes just still seems to kind of panic a little too quick and kind of get happy feet and kind of start, you know, there was that one fourth down play. I can't remember when it was in the game, honestly, but they couldn't convert. Mahomes had all day. The pass protection was great on that play. And Mahomes, you could tell, was just not comfortable, kind of like moving around in the pocket instead of just staying calm and staying in a good throwing position. He was kind of, you know, really, really bad happy feet. And that's, I like the word for happy feet, because I think it's appropriate, and I think it kind of puts him off balance when he gets too happy feet, and it's been bad this year. It's been a bad quality of the offense, and he makes up for it a lot of the time with his big arm. But when the coverage is good and you need to kind of, you know, stay in a good position to fire at any time when there is a quick window, Mahomes just hasn't really been great at doing.
I might argue with you there a little bit. I don't think the pass protection's been a big issue. They haven't given up a lot of sacks. There was two last night. You know, I don't know that they've given up more than two in any game yet this season. You know, I know sacks aren't the only measure of that. I agree with you on sort of Mahomes' comfort level, and he's going to grow into that, or this line sort of going to grow into that together. I think the interior pass protection has been fine. They've been dominant run blocking on the interior and solid in pass protection. I think the tackles have been, you know, maybe not elite, maybe not where you'd want them to be, but not so much that it's a problem. This offense, remember, before this game was remarkably efficient. Mahomes is completing passes at an amazing clip. This game was a disaster for Mahomes in a lot of ways. And yes, he was uncomfortable in the pocket, but he also wasn't finding anybody open. So this is my transition to my next draft pick. So this is the ninth pick in the draft, or my fifth round pick. I'm going to go with the secondary receiving targets just in general. Teams, obviously, we knew this was going to happen. We've said it all along. Teams are going to try to take away Kelce. They're going to try to take away Tyreek Hill. And in general, maybe even Tyreek Hill above Kelce, because you want to make sure that the Chiefs aren't just throwing bombs and getting, you know, 75-yard touchdowns on every play. They targeted Tyreek Hill 13 times yesterday, completed only 7 of those passes. Targeted Kelce 10 times, completed only 6 of those passes. That goes to the physical play of the defense, also how off target Mahomes was. But then you look down the line at the rest of the receiving targets. And once again, you had Byron Pringle, 2 catches, 11 yards. One of them was a touchdown, which is great. But Josh Gordon, 1 catch, 11 yards. Mecole Hardman actually had a little bit better game this week. He caught 9 of his 12 targets, which is got to be a career high for him in targets. For 76 yards, again, nothing big, but he moved the chains a little bit. But too many times I saw Mahomes drifting around the pocket, looking uncomfortable, partially because there was not a soul to throw to. And something's got to give as far as guys getting open and finding ways. And maybe they need to be schemed open. Maybe he's got to throw them open. Maybe he's got to trust them more and throw it to them when they're not open. But they're still not getting enough production whenever teams take away the primary targets.
Yeah, and I think it's telling that a game where McColl has 9 catches for 76 yards and he does lead your team in receiving, you're still not that impressed with his performance. He had a killer drop on that fourth down that actually they got bailed out on because it was a hold or a rough in the passer penalty. He alligator armed it a little bit. Yeah, and you're right. The secondary pass catchers, that was probably my next pick, to be honest with you. It just hasn't been enough. You know, you want to say Mahomes can elevate players to make them look better than they are. That's kind of what elite quarterbacks do. But at some point, it's got to be on the receivers to, you know, to make plays. And guys like Robinson, who see 75% of the snaps but don't do anything pass catching anymore, that just shows you how little they have at that position and why they brought Gordon up so quick. And I think that's very telling that they want to get Gordon involved in this offense as soon as possible because they need him, which is crazy.
They didn't say we're bringing Josh Gordon on and hopefully he helps us out a little bit here and there. They brought him on and said, we expect him to be a number two, number three receiver. You know, I mean, that is more than what they normally would give you about a player's role with the team, especially a player who's been, you know, on the street, you know, not in the league, not active for a long time. Yeah, that should tell you all you need to know. They're obviously easing Gordon in a little bit. He didn't get a lot of snaps. He had just the one target and the one catch this week. Maybe that situation resolves itself a little bit. But again, they're still not targeting the running backs in the pass game as much as I'd like to see it in a planned way or in a schematic way as opposed to a panic. You know, I think there were some checkdowns this week. But I would like to see the screen game really get going like you know it can with this offensive line and with this coach and play caller. And you'd like to see some wheel routes and some other stuff out of those running backs to get them loose in space and see some of these other receivers find a way to get open and make some plays or they're just going to get passed up. And maybe Josh Gordon is an answer to that, but it's just really, really frustrating to see an offense that should be this good have one or two players taken away and they can't move the ball.
Yeah, exactly. So before I get to my next pick, I do want to applaud us for being smart football fans and watchers. Neither of us have picked the run defense. I thought that was this huge problem, Stag. I thought this was this huge thing that we needed to correct and was the biggest issue with the team through the first part of the season was the run defense. And neither of us have picked them in this draft. I wonder why. Maybe it's because it's not actually that important compared to other issues on this team. But my next pick does kind of have to do with it, the run game on the defensive side of the ball. I'm picking the lack of athleticism in the linebacker group. And I know we saw Willie Gay finally. You know, I do want to say, hey, Willie Gay, as soon as he came in the game, all of a sudden the defense started getting stops. I don't know if once they kind of started playing him in the second half a lot more, and all of a sudden the defense looked a little better. So not trying to say it's exactly what it was, but I do think, you know, having Gay on the field helps a little bit. So, yeah, lack of athleticism at the linebacker position is my pick, though, because Hitchens, Neiman, and Bolton, look, for whatever they do good, you know, whether it's Hitchens in the run defense, you know, kind of stuffing a gap, maybe Bolton has played well against the run, I would say. Neiman, I still don't know what he does great. And actually, I did like the fact that it seemed like the Chiefs did insert Hitchens in the dime role last night, aside Sorensen in those dime packages instead of Neiman. You know, usually they have Neiman in that role. So that kind of shows you that they are getting tired of Neiman in the dime position. And maybe that leads to Gay once he gets more into it. Maybe that's where Gay will play more instead of Hitchens. But maybe they just made the quick switch for that game. But I think the reason teams are able to quick pass so much and hit the flats and hit these end arounds is because the linebackers can't get sideline to sideline very well. And they're taking advantage of that. It's free plays for the offense, just getting a ball to the flat real quick. And it's turned into big plays that they shouldn't be big plays. Linebackers should be able to catch those plays and make them 2-3 yard gains instead of first down conversions. Yeah. I think it's still a big problem.
Yeah. I had Hitchens was going to be my next pick. So I think this is the right place to talk about the linebackers. We were excited about a slimmer, faster Anthony Hitchens, you know, that was going to be more of a playmaker this year. There's going to be more of a factor. And he frankly has not been good. And I see the linebackers guessing wrong a lot, and they're not athletic enough to make up for it. Hope to see a lot more Willie Gay. Again, I'm even desperate enough to call for Dorian O'Daniel to get on the field some more. Last night with Nick Bolton, I saw a few plays where he just can't change direction quick enough. So he can run a little bit, he can hit people, but when he has to change direction, guys can go right past him. And I think that happened in coverage, and it happened with Josh Allen running past him last night. Frankly, when people want to talk about the Chiefs draft picks and how the teams comprise, and you mentioned it earlier, maybe instead of drafting a Nick Bolton, maybe they could have taken a corner or maybe even a receiver or somebody else that could have helped. Nick Bolton was the draft pick that I was most concerned about from this draft. He was the one that was more of a head scratcher for me because he is more of the same with what you see from the Chiefs linebackers. And it's not necessarily what we want to see. I'm sure there's a plan there, but when we see Nick Bolton on the field, does some good things, makes some tackles. He had a tackle for loss or two last night, which is great. Led the team in tackles with six. Sure, that's good. But, you know, it is more of the same with Hitchens and Bolton, I think, and it's not good enough.
Yeah, we've made the comparison before. Bolton is pretty much Hitchens light a little bit. He might be a little more athletic side to side, you know, and Hitchens probably has lost some in his age. You know, he's kind of an older player at this point. But yeah, I think the linebackers have been a huge issue. We all know it. I'm surprised it lasted so long, but I think that kind of shows you how bad this team has played so far this year, that, you know, one of the glaring holes that we all complain about every single week lasted till the ninth pick in the draft, or even 10th pick. I think that might've been the 10th pick.
There's a lot still on the board, a lot of,
right,
you would call it talent in any other type of draft, but this is the doomsday draft. Again, we're picking the worst things about this Chiefs team or this Chiefs season so far. I'm up next, and I'm going with drops. And I know you talked about ball security, but I'm going to be specific about this team and how they're not able to overcome when their receivers are dropping passes. And it's the strangest thing to me because it seems like, you know, one of those things that happens, right? The outcomes when you pass the football there, that's why some coaches in the past talked about how there was more that can go wrong with passing the ball than running the ball, right? Because one of those outcomes is the receiver could drop the pass, that everything else goes right. Quarterback delivers the ball, receiver doesn't catch it. But for some reason over the last couple of years, it seems like that's one thing the team is more surprised by, more deflated or defeated by, and less able to overcome is when the receivers aren't catching the ball. And it's led directly to a number of Mahomes' interceptions this year. It's led directly to drives stalling and dying. It was a big part of the early failures of the Super Bowl this last February. And when the receivers are not catching the football, you know, it seems to just derail the entire offense. We could have maybe even talked about this sooner than here in the fifth round or the sixth round of this draft, but it's really frustrating when even your best players, even the Tyreek Hills of the world, are dropping passes, and it's leading to turnovers, it's ending drives, it's derailing what is otherwise should be an unstoppable offense. And when they say that they're the only ones that can stop themselves, this is how they do it: turnovers and drops.
Yeah, exactly. I made that, you know, I made the drops point a little earlier too, but I think it's a great point. I just think this team, for whatever reason, is having a hard time hanging on to the ball, whether it be when they already have the ball or when they drop it. So it's a good point. I'm surprised this lasted long enough, but I'm glad this one dropped to the sixth round because I do think it's low on the list of problems, but I'm going to go with the coaching staff, their strategies, their game plans. I just think it hasn't been good enough apparently. And I think this team is lacking talent at certain positions, like we've said. So, you know, I don't want to put it too much on the coaching staff, but making decisions like keeping Sorensen on the field for 100% of the snaps or on the offensive side of the ball, just seems like they can't create big plays against these really good defenses. I mean, the Eagles are one thing, which aren't a good defense. Hey, good. Congratulations, you made these big plays against them. Bills and the Chargers, both games, they weren't really able to create big plays. They were kind of just taking what the defense was giving them, which is fine. But man, Andy's supposed to be creating something down the field. Andy's supposed to be, you know, these cover two beaters. There's things in the playbook. We saw the Bills run a cover two beater to get Sorensen on that huge pass. So there's stuff that the offense and defense both aren't doing game plan wise. And it's cost this team a little bit of success. And you'd like to see better improvement from the coaching staff, get them in better positions.
Can't argue with that. I mean, it's one of those things that's hard to pinpoint exactly what they can do better. But the feeling is that they can do better, scheming people open, scheming something up, being creative, switching up the personnel. You know, something's got to change. And, you know, the players in some ways are what they are. And so we'll see if the coaching staff can turn this thing around. With my next pick, I'm actually going to talk a little bit more about the defense. The lack of big plays on the defense has been a huge issue, because we alluded to it earlier. The Spagnuolo defense is predicated upon these guys going out there. Maybe they'll give up some yards, but they'll make a game-changing play. They haven't forced a turnover in three games. They didn't have any sacks last night against a team where you should be able to get to the quarterback. This defense needs to make some plays, and really, short of Tyrann Mathieu's triumphant return to the field and those two quick interceptions he had, they haven't done a lot.
Nope. Exactly. That's we made this point over and over, but man, Spagnuolo defenses need to make big plays, especially when you have the Patrick Mahomes led offense. You just need to get them the ball back sometimes, get some situational stops, timely stops, and they just haven't. So yeah, I think that's a good pick too. Is this the last, are we going last? Is this last round? Are we wrapping it up here? Last round.
This will be the Mr. Irrelevant of the doomsday draft. So what is the most irrelevant, relevant, negative thing that you can pick about this team?
So I think this is actually a great pick for the Mr. Irrelevant, because it's not a huge thing that I'm usually not going to be concerned about, but we're drafting and it's on the board. I'm taking the lack of explosiveness from the running back group, the lack of big playability from the running back group. And Clyde is obviously involved in this, even though he just got hurt. But man, you see some of those holes they were blowing up against the Chargers and Eagles. And to only get like 15 yards on some of those is actually kind of it is an indictment on the running back group. You know, we've seen running backs like and I know they're better players, so I don't, you know, I'm definitely not trying to compare them, but like Kareem Hunt and Jamaal Charles make those big holes and turn them into 40-yard touchdown runs, not just the 15-yard and then get tackled by the first guy that comes in contact with. The offense is missing big playability from the running game right now. And even if they're going to be an efficient rushing offense, they still need to be able to break some of those for big plays, big touchdown runs. A guy like Damian Williams could do it even more than we're seeing right now. And maybe Jarek's going to be that guy. Maybe Jarek gets more of an opportunity. Maybe Jarek can break off some of those and turn them into long touchdown runs. I'm not banking on it because, you know, he is older and it has gone through injuries, so he might not be as explosive as he'd be. But, man, it has been a little bit of a problem this year, the lack of explosiveness, big plays.
Yes, it's only, you know, in some ways that's going to get worse with Clyde out. I mean, I know Clyde's not a huge big play guy, but I don't anticipate Darrell Williams becoming all of a sudden a big play running back. I don't know that the Chiefs have anybody on the practice squad that's just going to blow people away. Jerick McKinnon is probably your best hope there, and we'll see if they're able to get him involved and if he's able to reward them for doing so. Well, there's still some undrafted free agents on the board. Things like the Chiefs' inability to cover tight ends, their inability to tackle, the too many penalties on offense and defense. I mean, there's a lot that we could talk about on the negative side, but I'm tired of that, frankly. I'm over it. I'm frustrated. This has been, you know, a difficult stretch to be a Chiefs fan. It was a long night last night watching this game, and then I had to personally write the winners and losers article on arrowheadpride.com, which is always brutal to do after a loss. So let's end this thing on the bright – on the bright side. Let's talk about some reasons for hope. What did you see last night, or what do you have in reasons for optimism going forward? Let's just try. Just give me something here, Ron.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned him a couple times, but Rashad Fenton played well. He absolutely played a good game. And I do think, as much as I don't think Ward is a difference maker or anything, getting Ward back, and I think they're going to start trusting Fenton to be the other starting cornerback. That group of Ward, Fenton, and Snead, you can talk yourself into and feel pretty good about, you know, and so Hughes and Baker don't have to be on the field. I kind of thought Fenton played pretty well. I'll let you take it away with your what have a bright side.
Yeah, Fenton was pretty solid, and I do think he's one of those guys on the field that you're not going to be cursing his name, you know, when he's in the game, and that's how I feel about Charvarius Ward as well. Those two guys give you some competence there, you know, and hopefully Snead and frankly Tyrann Mathieu, who we haven't talked about a lot at all, sort of get back to being our playmakers. The guys that make the exciting game-changing plays. I'd like to see more from Mathieu other than sort of throwing his arms up in frustration when Sorensen gets burned. You know, it's not an indictment on him necessarily, but the hope is when the rest of this group gets back to being right, that he can get back to really making some plays. So, yeah, Fenton was a little bit of a bright spot last night, a really minor bright spot. Again, the one pass to Josh Gordon was a tremendous play by Mahomes. And what you hope to see from Gordon, what we thought, what is Gordon here to do? He's here to go up and get a jump ball. And that's exactly what they did on the one time that they targeted Josh Gordon last night. So that's a little bit, just a sliver of sunshine there that Josh Gordon can be that jump ball receiver that you want him to be.
Yeah. And, you know, if you watch that play, they showed a good replay of it. He was open right away. If Mahomes would have been able to stay in the pocket and go through his progressions and get to Gordon, he would have had a lot of space in front of him and catch catch and run. So that would have been kind of nice to see. But, hey, like you said, it was a good catch either way. I'll also say, you know, McColl did have a good game. I think we got to give some credit to him for being the most reliable pass catcher, apparently. Nine catches, I think, on 12 targets, you said. So, you know, that's good to see. And they weren't all just gadget plays like I've kind of complained about with him. He was, you know, working routes in the middle of the field. And that was good. You know, also, we can say that, you know, Derek Nnadi, shout out Derek Nnadi, our guy, run defense, it was looking pretty good at times. You know, it's not like they were getting gashed against running backs like they haven't all year, really. It's been the quarterbacks, like you mentioned. Nnadi had a few run stops early. He actually, I want to say he had three or four. So that was good to see from Derek Nnadi as well. What else you got?
Yeah, Nnadi was pretty solid. I mean, there's a couple of plays where, you know, you'd hope he could get off of a block a little bit better. But for the most part, he's been a pretty steady force on this Chiefs defense for a long time. And even when the team was getting gashed in the run, without really reviewing it snap by snap, I was pretty sure that it wasn't Nnadi that was getting destroyed. A little bright spot from last night, Mahomes running the football. Typically in the past, we've said a running Mahomes is a good Mahomes. He's able to create with his legs. You don't want to see him being the team's leading rusher like he was yesterday very often. He had 61 yards on 8 carries, including a 23-yard run last night. But he was effective. He moves the chains when he runs the football, and it just gives teams one more thing they have to think about. So sometimes when nothing else is going right and Mahomes is able to convert with his legs, good things can happen.
Yep. Next one, shout out Harrison Butker. He's been perfect this year, and I'm gonna jinx him. I got a wood table right here I'm knocking on to hopefully help against that. But yeah, he made a great 54-yard field goal before half in the rain and a little bit of a wind. So that was good to see. You got to give him some credit. You know, the special teams has been this year. They haven't really needed to be, you know, anything special, but yeah. Good for Harrison Butker being perfect.
Remember when everybody was worried about extra points and how that one extra point is going to cost them a close football game? Obviously, that hasn't really been the case at all. All the extra points in the world weren't going to help them last night. But yeah, seeing Butker remain perfect even in bad conditions is encouraging. It's a small thing to hang your hat on there. I also thought a small thing the defense can hang their hat on is a little bit of progress in the second half. Yesterday, after the lightning delay, they were able to sort of reset and come back, and they got four straight stops, really. And that's, you know, we've said all along, all the defense really should have to do is get one or two stops, and the offense should handle the rest. The defense arguably held up their end of the bargain, at least in the second half. If you take away the pick six and you take away that interception that was, you know, a baloney, you know, penalty on Frank Clark, all of a sudden you got a pretty good second half defensive performance.
Yeah, exactly. No, the defense, how many times are we going to say this in these losses that we actually, you know, the defense actually kind of did what they needed to do, and the offense was the one that kind of, you know, didn't hold up their end of the bargain. Which, again, it's crazy to say, but, and the defense is getting healthier. You know, Frank Clark's back, and Jones obviously didn't play. They're probably just giving him a little rest on the wrist. It didn't seem like it's a multi-week thing. It's like this big deal because he was playing with it before, but maybe they just said, hey, you know what, we'll sacrifice this game to let him rest up on it, because that's not something that's just going to get better by keeping, you know, continuing to play on it. And, you know, Ward should be back soon. So hopefully the defense getting healthier is a bright spot here. Gay getting more into the defense. And we'll end with the defense, or the schedule in general, just getting a little easier. You know, they have played every single AFC contender pretty much so far, unless you think the Bengals are a true AFC contender.
Nope.
Besides the division rivals as well. So, yeah, I do think the schedule is going to get a little easier, and so that'll help them kind of build confidence, get some wins. Hopefully, you know, there's no guarantees because this team is not as, like I said, the elite team we kind of thought they were maybe. So there's no guarantees, but it will be nice to kind of have a, you know, against teams that maybe aren't as, you know, strong, because they have been playing some strong teams.
Yeah, I think for the final point that I wanted to make was that in some ways we always talk about mean regression and how you get all this, you know, the ball bounces a certain way. You get all the good calls, broken plays go your way, and, you know, turnover worthy plays, if that's even a real thing, end up as turnovers. This year, it seems like the ball's bounced the wrong way and nothing has gone their way. They've gotten all the calls seem to have gone the other way. Anything that could have been intercepted seems to have been intercepted. Whenever there's a fumble and a loose ball, you've got your 360-pound offensive lineman flopping on it and not recovering the ball. So I'm going to say that maybe this is rock bottom for this team, that all things have lined up in a way that has led to a really bad outcome so far, and they're due for some mean regression in a positive way to say, you know what, everything that could go wrong did go wrong last night. That's not going to be the case forever. This team has the opportunity to start from scratch, if you will, go from here in this point in the season, put a string a few wins together, and all of a sudden put this in the rearview mirror. And all it's going to take is, and this is a lot, but all it's going to take is Mahomes playing better, the rest of the team getting healthier, and then some of these breaks going in the right direction.
Yeah, and I know we've harped on the turnovers enough, but it is one thing that just in general, in football terms, statistically, you know, teams do not turn over the ball as much as the Chiefs are. And it has been a product of bad ball security, all that, but that is something that in theory is correctable. And so that's that they're not going to have this rate of turnovers throughout the rest of the season. And just that alone will help them, you know, produce a little more. Not having freaking four turnovers in two of their first five games is just ridiculous. But yeah, I think that's a pretty good, some pretty good bright sides, I would say, but definitely more negative than positive right now. And we got to be able to admit that as Chiefs.
You better. We're definitely squinting to see the bright spots at this point and trying to find positive takeaways. We hashed out all the negative stuff. I thought it was appropriate for us to try to come up with at least something bright to leave you on this week. The Chiefs are going to head into a stretch of the season here that should be more manageable for them. Hopefully they get a little bit healthier on defense and things start to turn. Mahomes is not going to stay down for long. That's one thing I'm pretty confident about. The rest of the stuff, we'll see. But thank you for spending the time with us and working through all of the issues that go along with a really what feels like a long losing streak for the Chiefs. Ron, and for everybody here at Arrowhead Pride, thanks for listening. Make sure you leave rates and reviews or wherever you do that. Join us next week on the Out of Structure podcast, and don't miss the rest of the lineup. And I'm sure you'll have plenty more opportunities to hear about what's gone wrong so far in this Chiefs season. Hopefully next week, let's talk about some more things going right. And we'll talk to you then.